The views and opinions expressed by A Little Bit Culty are those of the hosts and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of the podcast. Any content provided by our guests, bloggers, sponsors, or authors are of their opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, group, club, organization, business, individual, anyone, or anything. Welcome to A Little Bit Culty, a podcast about what happens when something that seems like a great thing at first goes to the dark side and takes you with it. I'm your host, Sarah Edmondson.
And I'm also your host, Anthony Ames, aka Nippy. Sarah and I met, fell in love in a quote, self-help organization that turned out to be a mega cult called Nexium. Heard of it? We got out of there together, and on our way out, we helped shut it down. Our journey as Nexium whistleblowers was captured in detail on a docuseries called The Vow on HBO, and also on the front page of a newspaper.
New York Times, babe.
Right.
Have you heard of it? Each week on A Little Bit Culty, we talk with other former cult members and whistleblowers, plus experts in things like cultic abuse and coercive control.
We also turn the mic over to advocates and clinicians with wisdom to share on recovering from everything from MLMs and toxic religion to bad romances with raging narcissists.
There's always something to learn about the cultiverse. Be sure to subscribe to A Little Bit Culty so you don't miss an episode. Find us on Instagram and at alittlebitculty.com. Hi, babe.
Hello. Where are we in our lives? Are we back from Hawaii in the timeline of our...
We're back from Hawaii. Are we going to tell people our big news?
You're pregnant?
Oh, gosh. I mean, that would be crazy and amazing,
just
but
kidding.
No, I'm 44. I feel like the shop is closed. And I mean, honestly, I would have more children. I'd love to.
It's open for business.
It's open for business, but it's not...
It's not open for a deposit.
It's not producing new...
human beings.
I was trying to find a metaphor. Anyway, I was going to share that we're moving to Atlanta.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we're moving to Atlanta.
That's kind of big news.
We have a date.
We have a date, mid-August.
Choice football season starts.
We don't have a home. We don't have a school. We don't have health insurance, but Troy has signed up for football. Yeah. It's the priorities,
We can do what everyone going to Hollywood does. Sell everything they have, go to Atlanta with $52 in our pocket, and just make it.
We're just going to make it happen. Right. So all our friends in Atlanta and in the South, we have friends in Nashville and Raleigh and Charleston, and all our friends in the South, please welcome us. Drop off casserole.
Right.
Show us around.
That's right.
More on that to come. We're actually going to be recording an Ask Me Anything with all the incredible questions you guys posted on our Instagram.
And the requisite shout outs to all the support, which has been amazing.
Yes. So many shout outs to supporters that have been keeping us going here. We actually just recorded an episode with Will Allen from Holy Hell. The documentary Holy Hell that is about the Buddhafield cult. And that was a really important movie that was part of our awakening and understanding, you know, what had happened to us. So I'm mentioning it now so you have time to watch the movie.
It's a resource list.
It's in our resource list. I'll mention that again, sarahedmondson.com/resources. That's a growing resource list. I need to update it. Please feel free to send suggestions of other things that you think might be good for that list. People who just get out of a cult, originally started by the OG Bonnie Peace.
Yeah. What else we got?
Our guest today also requires some homework, if you're so inclined. Although many of our listeners, I think, watched The Way Down on HBO Max and suggested it to us, and then we had to binge it when we were in Salt Lake City because we couldn't watch it in Canada for some reason. So we were so excited to connect with Gina, who's one of the brave people who spoke out against the Remnant Church and is also featured in part two. So as this episode drops, part two of The Way Down will have dropped a couple days ago. I believe it will be live as of April 28th on HBO Max. And if you're familiar with The Way Down, just to give you a little backstory, it's the HBO docuseries that chronicles the rise and fall of conservative Christian diet guru Gwen Shamblin / Lara, who actually died in a plane crash in May of 2021. And you may remember today's guest, Gina Wilson.
As a devoted member of the Remnant Fellowship, the Brentwood, Tennessee church founded by the big-haired Shamblin, Gina spent nearly 13 years inside the group as part of the music ministry team and also as a recruiter and sort of poster child for Shamblin's weighed down diet program and books.
Gina's 130-pound weight loss made her something of a walking, talking testimonial for the diet, which, in a nutshell, is a method that combines prayer and fasting in a sort of evangelical spin on mindful eating, although later allegedly becomes something that sounds a lot more like starvation, according to the HBO series. I want to make a little sidebar here that some of the diet stuff we talk about may be triggering for some of our listeners, especially if you've been in any group that has fat shaming or weird diets. And I want you to know I don't go too deep into that in this episode, and we will be doing future episodes about the cultiness of diet culture in general, but that's not what this episode is about in particular.
The Way Down Diet and Remnant Fellowship Ministry machine helped propel Shamblin's profile and sell millions of books. But in 2004, the church came under the glare of a different kind of public attention. After an investigation into the death of an 8-year-old boy whose parents were both Remnant Fellowship members uncovered that the pair routinely punished the child according to church teachings. Although the official investigation into the church's role in the boy's murder ultimately proved not to be prosecutable, the parents were both found guilty of murder and sentenced to life plus 30 years.
Gina joins us today to share more about her experience in the church, the collateral damage to her family unit, and how she ultimately escaped Shamblin's clutches after 13 years of what she describes as cultic control and spiritual abuse. She also shares how her faith has only deepened now that she's free from the Remnant Fellowship. Imagine that. That is a rare thing for our listeners. Here's our conversation with Gina Wilson. Welcome, Gina, to A Little Bit Culty.
Welcome, Gina.
Oh, wow. I'm so glad to be here. Thank you so much. I'm really excited about this.
Well, we have been anticipating this since before we saw The Way Down because...
Since Thanksgiving.
Yeah. As soon as it aired, actually, our listenership started sending us messages and photos. A lot of the photos were about Gwen's hair, which is often the thing that kind of captures attention, right? And then as the documentary progressed, just people being flabbergasted at what was being revealed, but also saying, like, you have to do an episode on this. It wasn't airing in Canada, so we had to wait till we went to Salt Lake City and we binged it.
Yeah.
And we've just been trying to find someone to interview ever since. So we were really grateful to Niall, one of the producers, Niall Capello from The Way Down, who connected us with you. So we're really excited because this is a long form opportunity to dive a little deeper to some of the questions we had after watching The Way Down. And we love the long form and we hope that you do too.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, a lot was shared of my story in the documentary, but there's a lot that wasn't. So I'm excited about that, to have the opportunity to maybe dive in a little bit deeper.
Great. Hopefully they'll have seen the series. If they have, can you remind our listeners who you are in the story from the doc?
Well, I was the one that, I think it was episode 3, where they featured my story more. I had been in Remnant for almost from the beginning, and I worked there. I shared a lot about just my personal story of my family trying to get out, you know, the things that were happening to me in my marriage because of all of the control. And I told a little bit of my story about the abuse and the horrific things that they did to me to keep me down and not allow me to get the help I needed and we needed in our marriage, which ended up opening my eyes, honestly, to see what was going on there. I think I had a jean jacket on and I was the one that looked really mad and tired.
Hey, fair enough.
We've been in a jean jacket as well.
Yeah. Gina, before you were mad and tired and all that stuff happened, so you joined in around 1999, is that right? That's when the church got started, if I did my research right?
Right. We started in the fall, and I believe the church started in like April of that year.
Okay.
So we were pretty close in after it started. There weren't too many in there yet.
And did you join through the weight loss program as well, or how did you get in? What was your hook?
Yeah, well, the weight loss program definitely was how we got introduced to the church. I had joined the Way Down workshop. That's what it was called back then. It was in virtually every church in the country and very popular. And I had been successful in that. And we lived in the Nashville area and we kind of bumped into Gwen at an event at another church that she had just left. I think she was members at that church at the time and had gone back to see some friends. We bumped into her there. She was adamant to, you know, speak with us and pursued us, kept talking to us about what was going on with this new church. and wanted us to, you know, hear more about it. She sent me a lot of emails about it, things she had been writing about and studying, and she called me. I felt actively recruited into the church. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It felt very natural at the time to kind of move into that realm because there were so many people starting to talk about this church in the realm of, you know, we're all like-minded. We've all got the same common beliefs and just kind of makes sense to all have community together. So that's kind of what we were drawn to in the beginning. And she actively recruited and she offered to come speak to a class I was leading at the time in Murfreesboro, and which was a big deal for mm-hmm. Gwen Shamblin.
What kind of class?
I was doing a class at the church I was attending at the time.
Okay.
I'd been leading classes for a couple of years.
So these are religious classes in the church, nothing to do with the Way Down.
No, it was a Way Down class in the church. Right.
Gotcha.
That's how she had it going in the beginning, was through the churches. Like on a Thursday mm-hmm. night, you do a Bible study. And one of the offerings was this faith-based weight loss program. And it was everywhere.
Just to backtrack for a second. So you had done the Way Down faith-based weight loss. You liked it. Then you became a teacher and you were teaching it, but you hadn't been in direct contact with Gwen up until that time that she sort of sought you out. Is that right?
Not on a personal level, really.
Right.
I had met her when we did some filming. She updated the class videos, and I had just lost all of my weight. And so I was contacted by Way Down to be a part of that. So I met her through that and had a couple of brief interactions with her at a few other, you know, I was on a local channel, you know, news thing one night about it, etc. I think we did 2020. They came down to, you know, it was at her height when she was doing Larry King and all that.
Yeah.
We were asked to be there and give our testimonies for that.
So she had celebrity status.
Oh, absolutely.
With you guys,
she was definitely a celebrity to us. And I say us, you know, as my ex-husband, but we went into it together. I started the program first and he started seeing changes in me weight loss wise. So he started diving in and doing it, and he was successful. So we were both really all in with the program and very in awe to, you know, be able to, speak with Gwen Shamblin and she's calling me. Wow.
Yeah, of course. I had a question just as somebody who's into health and wellness. I'm not a dietitian or a nutritionist in any way, but I was curious when I'm watching the doc, what the actual diet was and that it was faith-based. And I did hear some clips of Gwen saying, like, in the moment where you want to eat, that you pray instead. Is that accurate?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, you did other things too, but, you know, you couldn't always just stop and drop and pray, you know, if you're working or whatever. But the concept was, and, you know, I still believe in it today. I think it was very revolutionary the way that she presented it. I think the concept has been around a while of intuitive eating, but to put the faith-based part of it with it, it was very revolutionary at that time for the church to hear that you could bring God into that. And, you know, I remember thinking, you know, before I found Way Down, I had struggled with my weight for years. I was in a hopeless state. Like, I guess I'm just going to be this way and nothing's working. And I was miserable. And I had this thought in my mind for years that if I could just lose weight, I'd be happy. My marriage would be better. You know, it'd be great. And everything would just be wonderful. I never considered bringing God into it. And so that was the part that really light bulbed in me. So the concept was you're intuitive with your body and you eat when you're hungry and you stop when you're full. And, you know, like you drink when you're thirsty, you sleep when you're tired. It made sense to me. And you didn't have to like have this list of restricted foods. You could, you know, you were free to eat whatever your body was calling for. And I didn't have to say no to fried chicken and pizza anymore. So I went into it with that and it changed my world because I was free from the diet mentality and I saw results very quickly. But, you know, there are times that, you know, you're really wanting to eat and you're really not needing to eat. It's not fuel at that moment. It's just head hunger. That's what she called it, was head hunger or emotional eating, you know,
and which is a thing.
A stress eating. That's what I call it. It's definitely a thing. So anyway, that's when you would, you know, just pray, you know, you'd ask God to just help you to have the strength to wait upon him for the right time to eat. And you get in the word, look for him to strengthen you and help you through that time. So that's what she meant by that. And it changed my world. Like I said, it's like, wow, I had no idea that I could do this and it would work.
Did you think this was a calculated move on her part, a shrewd business move on her part to do? Because she did have background in nutrition. Were you considering that at the time? Or like, did you feel any ill intent, bad intent? What was going on at that point?
No, not initially. She was very charming and you know, warm and just a cheerleader for you and just, you know, seemed like she was just out for your good. And I do believe in the beginning, this is my own personal feeling, but I do believe that she had good intent in the beginning.
And then it got to her head later.
Yeah, that's the gist of my question.
Yeah, I didn't sense it at all. I think it was years later, I started seeing it over time that things are changing. Her motives are changing.
Well, it's clear, too, if you look at her arc, too, that even just listening to certain audio and even her appearance got a little bit more extreme from what felt more integrated in a societal thing. It got more extreme as she got removed from it. That's my impression.
I agree with that. Me and my friends and former members, we laugh about this a lot. It's like the more power she got, the more control she got, the bigger her hair got. So it was just kind of a sign over time.
You definitely see that.
The hair is an indication of her timeline. Yeah.
So with the diet, you could eat whatever you wanted. There was no emphasis on what's healthy or unhealthy or like no fried foods or too much carbs or anything. It was just like portion, small portion control, it sounds like.
Absolutely. Complete freedom. Of course, you know, being in tune to what your body's calling for, you know, like not eating chocolate three times a day as she taught.
But my body calls for chocolate sometimes. So how do you?
It does. It absolutely does. Mine does too.
All day.
I guess to me, and we've talked about this before, like we're not religious, but I do have a connection with something. I just don't call it God. For me, I would interpret that as like being mindful and being present and like connected to myself or my higher power, whatever what that is. And that would make me realize, okay, I'm just like emotional. I want to stuff it down with some chocolate. That's not healthy right now.
Right.
That I think it sounds like the good part, whether you call it God or whatever. What was unhealthy about it, I guess, is the question. Why did it become a problem?
When I got into Remnant is when I started struggling. When the control started coming in more and more, she got it off of the basic freedom of just listening to your body and going to God. And she started coming in and controlling things. And I started getting really whacked out. And then it started becoming severe restriction of being able to eat. And, you know, like eating maybe a half of a biscuit in the morning with coffee and then not eating anything the rest of the day, maybe a light salad at 7 o'clock at night, and that'd be all I'd eat all day. That was the unhealthy part.
Ah, it's extremely unhealthy.
Yeah. You were doing the program. She brings you into the church. At the beginning, what was it like? What was the community like? What was good about the Remnant Church that drew people in, do you think? And what were they signing up for in addition to the supportive structure around the diet?
You know, during that time when she was at her height, popular, and her book was on the bestseller list, she was on Larry King, The View, and all of that. She was on Tyra Banks at one point later on in Remnant 2. Everybody knew of her. So everybody was very aware of the good from the program. And I think there was just a lot of people like me and my ex-husband that were just feeling like this is a natural thing to just be around like-minded people. And, you know, this wasn't really being taught in the mainstream church. It was, you know, on a lower level, kind of outside of the church doctrines, but people were really having a lot of success. So, you know, that's what drew me in, was I just wanted to be around other people that were experiencing what I was experiencing. It took us to a higher level of spirituality, seeing God really move in our lives, and we can pray and get our prayers answered and start feeling like we're getting blessed for walking in what she was teaching was, you know, obedience to not having greed and gluttony.
Obedience to God or obedience to the scripture or obedience to her or all of that?
Well, in the beginning, it was to God, definitely obedience to God. So that drew me in. And I'm sure that was a big draw for many people, was just to have the ability to commune with other people of like mind.
I'm wondering, because you had done the weight program, were a lot of the original members people that had performed well in the weight previously? You think that might have been one of the reasons she contacted you, because you had demonstrated that you could follow at least her instructions or her interpretation. So was that original group a lot of those people?
Absolutely. Okay. I hadn't really considered it like that, but I think you're probably right, because I had been successful.
Well, you have buy-in. You have buy-in. And if she has a celebrity status and you've earned her attention through your merit, I can imagine it feels pretty good when she reaches out to you.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I saw that throughout the years in Remnant, that if you wanted to get close to Gwen, you needed to be super thin, a yes man or a yes gal, you know, to get around her, have time with her.
You're a worker. You're a worker. You can stick to a plan. So she understands that.
Right.
And she's going to need people to be working. And you're one of those people. So I'm guessing if she's strategic in this, she wants people that aren't sitting around not working the plan.
Absolutely. Right? That's a fact. Yep. And I was a good commercial for her wherever I went. And it was natural for me to put her up on a pedestal, and she let me. Mm-hmm. You know, she let us all.
I'm sure she did.
I'm sure she didn't mind that.
Yeah. Right.
Okay. So I'm getting a sense of the ecosystem, right? Yeah, the ecosystem. And how many years was it, would you say, when things were good for people to remember the documentary? This was in that big... Did you move immediately into that big church, that big... Ashland, is that what it's called? Ashland was where she lived.
That was her home.
Oh, right. Okay.
The big white church. It was 1999 when they started the church, and it was 2004, I believe, when we went into the church. So we met for several years at Way Down in their office space. Okay. And then as it grew, we moved into their warehouse space. And so I guess for 2 or 3 years we were there.
Can you explain to somebody who's maybe not super well-versed in the different distinctions in Christianity, what was the difference between, say, just your standard Christian church and then the remnant church? What was from what I understand, there was a dismissal of the Holy Trinity as part of the, like, this is a distinction. What mm-hmm. was Gwen saying made Remnant the one true church?
In the beginning, you know, the big draw and what she was talking about, you know, encouraging people to get into it, was that this really was the one true church, that all the churches out there where her program had been in, she was everywhere doing that. Her premise was to get people to leave their church, to start talking about how the current church you're in is not fulfilling what you're meant to have. It's not supporting you. It's not telling you the truth. It's not helping you to overcome what she called this greed for food and idolatry. And, you know, you're being misguided. They're false. This is the truth here. This is where you're going to get the truth. This is where God's calling you to be. So she used that a lot in the beginning, you know, to kind of bring people in and have them leave their church. And then people would be on staff at churches, and they would just feel this conviction when she would share these things. And she was going around, and I was going with her, you know, some of us, the new members in this early stage, we were going around to different parts of the country, and she was holding these little events to bring people in to tell them about Remnant and to try and get them into Remnant. And so she'd talk them out of their church and tell them what was wrong with their church and how she had the hold on what was right, and scare us all. And right. So people were leaving staff positions and scared to go back in, and you know, like, God's going to strike us dead if we go back in the doors there, and he's going to turn his face from us. She was already doing some of that. Mm. It was, you know, minimal, but we were still hearing some of it.
Now, listen, no judgment here, because we joined something with very little information. You know, it was all based on what people we trusted said. Mm-hmm. You know, I never checked Keith's resume or, you know, his credentials.
We checked him with the wrong people.
We checked with the wrong people, right?
Right. I could say the same. Yeah.
Right. So I guess what I'm hearing is that people were going based on her charisma and her fortitude and her delivery.
Well, she also has a little bit of validation from media, and she has cachet.
That's exactly what I was doing. I was looking at, well, everything she's been teaching me so far, look at what it's doing for me. Mm-hmm. So I had that mm-hmm. in my mindset as well.
I would just look at, like, you know, because we've interviewed other people from different religions where so much of the doctrine is based on somebody saying, I've spoken to God, and this is what he's telling me to do. And I guess for someone who's doesn't have that same religious background, my question is, but how do I know you spoke to God? Nippy and I joke, and I hope this isn't offensive. If it is, I'll cut it out, Gina. But like, since then, I've been saying, I spoke to God, Nippy, and he says, you need to buy me flowers, or like, buy me a massage. Like,
and like, then I'm like, he called me first and told me he was going to say that to you. And so...
We joke, but like, I don't want to be offensive, because I know that you have a connection and I totally respect that. Like 100%. What I question as somebody from the outside is going, how do you know when someone says, I spoke to God and this is the way, how does that feel? How does that resonate with you? Is it because of who she is? Is it because of the street cred? Is it because what she's saying also resonates?
She definitely had the credentials there in my mind of, you know, what she's teaching is bearing out fruit. And she used that a lot as she would talk about that. And she would bring in scriptures that made sense. One that she would use a lot would be where Jesus says to look, examine your leaders and your teachers and examine the fruit of their mm-hmm. lives. And she would say that all the time, examine the fruit in my life, examine the fruit in your life from what I've taught you, and know that I'm speaking for God. And some of it did make sense, even today.
For sure.
I think over time, she used that to her advantage more and more to control us and to pick apart and twist the scriptures. And when someone says, well, God told me that you need to do this or that, you know, I usually go back with, well, he hasn't told me that. So when he does,
good for you.
You know, because it's a personal relationship. And so I see now, I mean, I was so naive in so many ways, but I was a seeker. I was seeking for truth. I was easily molded because of her charisma and her love bombing and all of that. And she wanted to put me right to work and gave me a cause and a calling. And I felt like I'm fulfilling God's purposes. I mean, she used that fully to her advantage with me and everyone there. But at some point, you know, you start going in and you start examining the fruit again, and it's not good fruit anymore. What she taught at the beginning ended up being, for me, what got me out. I just listened to what she told me in the beginning and I did
that. You examine the fruit.
The fruit's not there anymore. It's bad.
It's or it's rotten.
Yeah. It's rotten.
We tell our stories. We change the world. A Little Bit Culty is proud to support the hashtag I Got Out project, which empowers survivors of cultic abuse to share their stories online as a catalyst for education, prevention, and healing. Learn more about the hashtag I Got Out movement and find resources at igotout.org. Did anyone learn a language in high school and then let it go and then have regrets about that later? If you're anything like me, then maybe you'll relate. I did French all the way up into 12th grade and then I let it go. I mean, I lived in Montreal for a few years and, you know, practiced a bit, but it just slipped away. And then I found Babbel. Babbel is the language learning app that sold more than 10 million subscriptions. And thanks to Babbel's addictively fun and easy little bite-sized language lessons, I've been able to get back my French. I've actually found learning French to be fun again. And c'est vrai, je parle français. With Babbel, you only need 10 minutes to complete a lesson, so you can start having real-life conversations in a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Other language learning apps use AI for their lesson plans, but Babbel lessons were created by over 150 language experts and voiced by real native speakers, not computers. Their teaching method has been scientifically proven to be effective. And with Babbel, you can choose from 14 different languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, and German. Formidable. That means wonderful in French. Plus, Babbel's speech recognition technology helps you to improve your pronunciation and accent. Clearly still working on that. There are so many ways to learn with Babbel. In addition to lessons, you can access podcasts, games, videos, stories, and even live classes. Plus, it comes with a 20-day money-back guarantee. Start your new language learning journey today with Babbel. Right now, when you purchase a 3-month Babbel subscription, you'll get an additional 3 months for free. That's 6 months for the price of 3. Just go to babbel.com and use promo code CULTY. That's BABBEL.com, code CULTY. Our team at A Little Bit Culty Podcasts loves the Blood Ties podcast because it is gritty and current and fascinating. It's also a little bit culty. Blood Ties, the award-winning audio drama from Wondery, returns for its third season, Strange Days, with another thrilling story about greed, power, and deception. 5 years have passed since Eleanor, played by Julian Jacobs of Community, took over as CEO of the infamous Richland family empire, alongside her half-brother, Santino, played by Christian Navarro of 13 Reasons Why. Together, they decide to invest the family fortune in a groundbreaking, controversial new drug. But as shocking revelations about the new treatment emerge, Eleanor and Santino go to every length to protect their control of the Richland family dynasty. As Eleanor's father always said, medicine is a bloody business. Listen to Blood Ties, Season 3, Strange Days, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or you can binge the whole series now, early and ad-free, by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app. before you got to that key juncture, looking back now, and I'm sure you've done lots of reflection, share with us and our listeners, what were some of the things that you now know are red flags? Do you remember the first time that you had a moment?
You know, there were so many times that she would, in the beginning, love bomb you. And you could do no wrong in her eyes. And she was just so happy that you were with her and with the church. And what a blessing. And then just out of the blue, I remember one time her just not having time to speak to me and just kind of shut me down. We were actively recruiting constantly through the way down classes. That was one of her big goals, was to keep local classes going and start doing online to keep bringing people into the church through the way down program. And so she had this little event at the way down office, and we brought in people from our class that seemed to be interested in the church. And I brought her up to meet Gwen after it was over. And we were instructed that we weren't doing our job if they weren't in front of Gwen, because Gwen was the one that they needed to hear from. She was the voice of God. And so I brought this woman up, and we stand there and we wait for others to talk to Gwen. And then it's finally our turn. And I introduce her, you know, this is my friend so-and-so, and she's so glad to be here. And I just want you to meet her. And Gwen just stops and just looks off in the distance and just has this random thought about something to someone else, starts talking to him. Then she looks down, starts fixing her boot. And the woman's talking to her the whole time, and she never acknowledges the woman's there. Yeah. She doesn't acknowledge I'm there. And I'm just like, what in the world is going on? Then we end up walking away. You know, she kind of goes, good to meet you. And I've got to go take care of something. And she's gone. And I thought, that is the rudest thing I've ever seen in my life. And that was so embarrassing to me, because I had edified Gwen to this woman all week. I remember thinking, what in the world is going on? That was probably my first memory of, this is bizarre. And then she got to where she would do that more and more. If it suited her and it benefited her, she'd stand and give you time. But if not, she'd act like you were just totally unimportant, not even there. Reading your book, I'm sure you had many experiences where you thought, oh, it was something I did. Because that's how we were all groomed. Like, oh, I did something wrong. I didn't have the right outfit on or the right color on, or I spoke too firmly to Gwen. And, you know, I was too assertive. I mean, I was always looking at myself like, what did I do wrong? I'm such an idiot, because that's how she groomed us to be.
Right. And looking back, when did it go from great to not so great? What else was happening in the church? And I know you mentioned in your marriage, you started to get involved in, like, was she couples counseling you, or what was happening?
Little by little, and I tell people all the time that I equate this whole experience to a frog in a pot of water.
Yeah.
And I had no idea that the heat had been turned up, and it took years to realize I'm about to boil over. But it was just little by little, just little things like that would just keep happening. And I would get corrected just out of the blue in front of everybody. A big thing for me was she was constantly on me about my weight. And that's why I said earlier that I didn't start struggling with any of that until I was in Remnant, because she made me so ultra focused on my weight and what the scale said. And I was never thin enough for her. And she would say it to me in front of whoever she was with. And it was so mortifying, so embarrassing. And she would call me a liar. She'd say, you've gained weight this week. And I knew I hadn't, because I had been on the scale every day that week because I was so concerned about it. And she said, you're lying to me, in front of just a whole group after church. And then she took me into her office. She said, you need to come with me. We need to talk about this in front of everybody. Ugh. She did that kind of thing all the time. It was just to keep me down, keep her thumb on me. But that was a huge source of contention, where I just kept thinking, this is just not right. This is not cool. Yeah. This is not what it used to be. And then even when I got as thin as I thought I could get, it's still, I needed to lose 5 more pounds. She started having the church fast a lot. And some people that really had a lot of weight on them, she would call severe strugglers. You know, she would call a lot of them to a 40-day fast. And they had to do it. Wow. I mean, they had no choice in it. And, you know, she would introduce these things every year. It'd be more and more repercussions. But basically, by the end of it, you know, I knew that, well, and our whole family knew it. My ex-husband knew it. We couldn't complain to anybody. We couldn't say, I'm concerned about this, or I'm concerned about what she's doing here. We couldn't even talk to each other in our marriage. We cannot even have that closeness where we're really sharing our deepest concerns with each other. Mm. We were taught to turn each other in. Our children were taught to turn us in, you know, especially adult children were taught to turn their parents in, if they weren't happy enough, if we weren't exuding joy all the time, if we were having marriage problems, if we were seen overeating, and certainly if we complained about leaders or Gwen, you know, we were supposed to turn each other in. So you couldn't talk about it. You're in constant fear. If you did get called in about any of these things, or if you didn't get your weight off, that was the biggest thing. Or if you were considered divisive, where, you know, you start talking too much about things that she considered coming against her, mm-hmm. then you would be threatened to be kicked out of the church. And what that right. meant was we didn't have contact with the outside world, really, except we had jobs, but we were taught and groomed to not have any connections in the world, as she called it.
You were isolated.
We would lose everything. We would lose our friends, sometimes our sources of income. We'd be completely shunned, like the show a few years ago about leaving Amish. You know, that's how I felt. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm going to be totally shunned by the community and not accepted in. And then she would divide husband and wife. You know, for me, I knew I'd seen it happen many, many times. And I knew someone personally it had happened to that was out. And she would turn the spouse that was in, still in the church, she would turn that spouse against the one that wanted out of the church and get them to divorce the other, and then turn the kids against that parent and bring in a new spouse within months and get them remarried and give the kids a new, more godly mom or dad. So I would have been out and had lost even my family. Mm. I wouldn't even had access to my children without years and years and lots of dollars to go to court to fight for that.
Right. Just before we get into that part of your journey, you just said so eloquently, and I think gave our listeners again such a clear template, like this is so textbook. Everything you just said, you know, creating the dependency on the group so you feel like you can't leave, having the group self-police. The leadership doesn't even have to do it. You're all telling on each other. And then shunning, right? Like shunning. Checking off all the abuses. Yeah, all the abuses. So how long were you in, but you knew that you were out? How long did that go on for?
Well, I would say probably by 2007 or 2008, I was starting to really start processing this more and more. Mm-hmm. Let's see, probably by 2010, we got out in 2012. So probably a couple of years before that, I came to a point where I just can't do this anymore. And I'm about to have a nervous breakdown. And I confided in my oldest sister, who lives close by in Brentwood. I confided in her that I was having marriage trouble. That was how it started. And so I immediately got some outside support and we started talking a lot. She had been concerned for years. I had always just kept her at bay, as we were taught to do that. You know, stay away from your family because they're going to turn you against us and turn you against the church.
Of course.
I finally started letting her in and she encouraged me to start examining the fruit. She encouraged me to even go to get some counseling, just presented the truth. Gwen's not allowing you to even get marriage counseling because we couldn't. Mm. We were not allowed to do any of that. It was all her or one of her appointed leaders that we had to counsel with. So that got me really kind of thinking maybe I could get out of here. And I'd made a couple attempts. I just kind of left on a Friday night, went to stay with her and texted my ex-husband that, you know, I'm leaving. I can't do this. I can't be in the church anymore. I'm not sure I can be married anymore. By Sunday or Monday, they were blowing my phone up so much, all the leaders and Gwen herself, that they were pulling me back in and bringing to my mind, you know, you don't want to lose everything. You don't want to lose. Think about your children getting married and you wouldn't be able to be there. Think about not being able to see your grandbabies one day. You know, so they were threatening me. And so I got pulled back in. But I think over those last 2 or 3 years, my marriage was getting progressively more miserable and more miserable that I just couldn't stay in anymore because I knew they weren't giving us the help we needed. And I knew I couldn't live like this anymore in this marriage. And I knew that they weren't going to let me be in the church if I left him, divorced him, so I might as well just get out of the church. And so I was trying to build myself up with courage, but 2 or 3 times, man, I just got pulled back in because I was so scared I was going to lose it all. It was a really horrendous time, but it was my marriage that really got me to just like, I've just got to have the courage to do this because I just couldn't live in this marriage anymore. And I don't want to disparage him. He was not getting any help.
No, he was in the same environment you were. Yeah.
We couldn't talk about things. And there was definitely some things going on that, and I mentioned this in the documentary, but he was struggling with certain things. And there was some infidelities even. And that was the thing that was pushing me. Like, I just can't continue. If we could get some help and I can, maybe can have some hope here.
Because there was definitely a subservience too, right? Women to men.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And this, I guess, is what really opened my eyes. This is, you know, my awakening, as I would be pulled back in by, you know, these leadership texts and threatening me to lose everything if I didn't come back. And then I'd go in and I'd have to go see Gwen, or I'd have to go see Ted. And sometimes it was another leader, David Martin. You would go in and see Gwen sometimes when it was super bad, but she was delegating too, because she had so many. She was correcting people night and day. I mean, there was hundreds and hundreds of us that she was having to corral and control.
I bet. That's a full-time job.
I would go in and, you know, I would be told by either her or whoever she appointed to talk to me. What I was going to say was, it all came from her. It was her words. Mm-hmm. They were just mockingbirds. They didn't know what to say, and they were only saying what she wanted to be said. But, you know, I would be told, well, I need to submit more in my marriage, and I need to lose 10 more pounds, and I need to be more sensual. It's all about what I'm not doing. And if I just do all those things, everything would be perfect in the world, in our marriage. And wasn't anything he was doing. And there was some big things happening there. So I was constantly being told it was my fault and I needed to lose more weight and submit more, and then everything would be fine. And that wasn't working. It was making it worse. I was getting very resentful, and he was actually being more entitled. It was enabling him.
That's so unhealthy.
Not healthy. And he recognizes that today. And I just want to say, I mean, we've really made great peace with each other.
That's great.
We're in a really great place. And I'm just so thankful for that.
That's great.
And did you two leave together in the end?
We did.
I know how you woke up, but how did he snap out of it?
When you're in this situation where you feel like it's hopeless and you don't know how in the world you're going to get out of this. And I was just going in this spiral downward with anxiety and panic attacks. And I was about to crack. I found out that there was another transgression that had happened in our marriage. And it was like I snapped. It's like, I'm done. I shut down emotionally. Mm. I'm getting out. I don't care what the repercussions are. I'm just going to have to trust God. And so I feel like my faith in God has increased so much through this process where I know people would scratch their head and go, how's that possible? A lot of people will say, how could a good God let you go through something like that? And what I saw in that was God coming in and being my rescuer. And he was totally aware. You know, God's totally aware of whatever we're going through. He already knows it. And he's just wanting us to lean upon him. So that's what I started doing. And the more I prayed, the more I started asking for help, because I'd seen him answer prayers coming into Way Down, all of the wonderful things he had done originally. I knew he could. And I had lost my faith in that in those years in Remnant, because she had turned it into, it was her being the source,
right,
off of God. That was what was the most evil thing about it in my mind, is making people think God is evil. It was her that was evil, and man is evil and God is not. And I want to say that clearly in this. And so through that process, I wanted out. I was determined I was getting out. I started asking God to give me strength, to guide me, to help me. He started bringing things, resources to me. And my sisters came in. Both of my older sisters became just a huge emotional support for me. I got in contact with some former members who had been leaders, and they started giving me emotional support. I started secretly going to see a counselor, which was helping. I was just getting stronger and stronger. But it was a 6-month period of time that I was doing all this inside of there, scared out of my mind that I'm going to get caught. They're going to find out. I'm going to lose my family. I'm going to lose my kids. And at the end of that 6 months, when I almost did have a nervous breakdown through it, I really believed that God was leading me to bring my ex into it and tell him, because I couldn't tell him. I couldn't tell my 20-year-old daughter. I was afraid I was going to get turned in. But I told him. We went away for a family vacation to the beach, and I told him everything that I knew, everything that I'd learned, all the abuses that had happened to me, how many years I'd wanted to get out. And I told him, I said, I don't feel like you've had the help. I've had the help. We haven't had the marriage help either. I want us to get out together and get help. And so I pled my case before him, And I mean, he could have turned me in and I could have lost everything. But I believe that God came in and gave me favor there because I was putting my faith in him. And he was like, oh, I went out too. I mean, it was just like this big relief. Wow. Like, thank you. I've been wanting out for years. And, you know, I said, it's either you choosing the church or you're choosing me. You're not getting both. Mm-hmm. And he was like, I choose us. And it was beautiful. Wow. That was like my first ability to breathe. And then from there, we, you know, prayed over, you know, we got to tell our 20-year-old because she's, you know, of age. She could choose to stay in and cut us off. And we knew they were going to try and get her to do that. So there's a lot of prayer over that. And I believe that there was huge favor. It was just gut-wrenching. It was probably the hardest day of my life. One of the hardest days of my life was to have to tell my 20-year-old that we're leaving the church because we'd all, you know, she'd been trained to like, oh, that's, she's coming against God. I got to get away from her. But, you know, after about 24 hours, she was on board. She was like, I think you're right. I think I see this too. And so then we made a plan secretly to get out and to tell the youngest. They were 12 and 13 and we could not tell them till the day we were actually leaving because everybody would have known. They would have told everybody, you know, their friends and everything. And so we had that day. It was a really hard day for them because they had been brought up in this church. They knew nothing but this. They had no friends outside of this church. Mm. They were homeschooled. They were there every day. They grew up in it. It was a gut-wrenching day. I mean, I just broke and wept over these children and their friends. They knew the consequences. We were going to be shunned. They'd never be able to talk to their friends or see them again.
Hey, culty listeners, lovers of cult-busting content, ALBCers, culty kids. We've gotten a lot of requests to put up a link where people can throw some funds up behind the podcast and help support what Little Bit Culty is doing. And you know what? That's a great idea. Thank you for that. And as we've gotten to know other podcasters and learn more about this whole podcast thing, we've been learning that it takes a whole lot of different resources and different sources of revenue and listener support to keep it rolling. Sponsorships and ads and the occasional appeal to amazeballs listeners like you. That's why we added a way for anyone who wants to support the show to do exactly that. You can go to littlebitculty.com/support or the link in our Instagram bio or smash that link in our show notes to make a one-time contribution or a recurring one. We will pay your support forward with a galactic level of love and light and healing resources, of course. Again, it's littlebitculty.com/support or check out the link in our Instagram bios. Next up, we really got to figure out what to call you, our listenership. ALBC Nation? Flying Monkeys? We're going to have to workshop that. Thanks, guys. Our team at A Little Bit Culty Podcasts loves the Blood Ties podcast because it is gritty and current and fascinating. It's also a little bit culty. Blood Ties, the award-winning audio drama from Wondery, returns for its third season, Strange Days, with another thrilling story about greed, power, and deception. 5 years have passed since Eleanor, played by Julian Jacobs of Community, took over as CEO of the infamous Richland family empire, alongside her half-brother, Santino, played by Christian Navarro of 13 Reasons Why. Together, they decide to invest the family fortune in a groundbreaking, controversial new drug. But as shocking revelations about the new treatment emerge, Eleanor and Santino go to every length to protect their control of the Richland family dynasty. As Eleanor's father always said, medicine is a bloody business. Listen to Blood Ties, Season 3, Strange Days, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or you can binge the whole series now, early and ad-free, by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app.
Were you physically moving somewhere, or were you just going to stay local and then you were just not going to be a part of the church?
Well, we were going to leave the church officially, make it known, but we were also putting our house on the market to move and get out of Brentwood. So we told the kids, and it was a hard day, but they got through it, and we were all on the same page. And I just believe that was all God's favor. Everything was just clicking. We sold our house in a week. We moved. We got to a new city. We moved back to Murfreesboro. They got into public school and adjusted so well. It was just a beautiful time. It was just like peace was everywhere. We knew there was just confirmation after confirmation that God was helping us. That really built my faith and helped me believe that, hey, you know, I don't need to assess my opinion of God through the eyes of this person. Mm-hmm. Man's going to let us down, but he doesn't. So I wanted to share that. I have a lot of hope today for anybody that's in a situation like this. I kind of assess it to like the story of Moses and the Israelites and how horrific that had to have been for them to get out of Egypt, but he got them out. He rescued them. Mm-hmm. And I felt like that. He did the same for you all. I mean, I've read your book, Sarah, mm-hmm. and I've watched the documentary. It's just amazing how everything came together and you all were able to be in unison together and coming out. It was just a lot of favor.
Yeah, a lot of things went right.
You know, we use different words, but I agree.
Yeah.
It's the same force, right? You got pulled by some dark.
Light and dark, and you know, it's just different words. How's your life now? And what would you say to people? Because I'm sure there's a lot of people who are in your boat, not just in the Remnant Church, but like a lot of the people we speak to in the Mormon Church and the Jehovah's Witness and all sorts of churches where they know it's not right for them, but they can't leave because of everything you just said.
Yeah, it was the hardest time in my life, I'd have to say, but yet the most empowering time in my life. It's been a hard road since, I'm not going to lie, you know, and I mean, our marriage suffered, you know, we got out and, you know, we got counseling and he got help. It was maybe too little too late. I don't know. There was so much damage done. You know, we ended up divorcing about 5 or 6 years later, but we gave it, you know, one last shot outside of the control of the church. And so I'm really thankful for that. That's some major collateral damage.
Right.
And a lot of healing that still needs to be done in all of us. Them dealing with just social anxiety and this constant condemnation message that was taught them, you know, never feeling good enough. And I'm really proud of what they've done so far. They're very strong. But, you know, we've all got a lot more healing to do.
Sure.
The marriage suffering, it really brought a lot of damage to me and my self-esteem. Gaining weight from all of this, you know, going, you know, I turned away from all the principles for a long time because I didn't want to be loyal to Gwen in any way.
Right.
And I think a lot of people that have left the church, you know, experienced that. And there's a lot of shame and condemnation in that because, you know, she put that over us for years. So I'm really in a much healthier place with that in my mind. And I'm working on my health and my weight loss. I've lost about half of it now. And, you know, I don't feel like that's my in and all of who I am anymore. It's not my identity.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
And so I'm in a new relationship. I'm engaged. We're going to be married in a few months.
That's great.
And, yeah, thank you. Very exciting times.
That's great. That's awesome.
Have grandbabies now. My heart really goes out to those that are still in Remnant and those that are out and are still struggling and need to heal.
Right.
And I know you know this. I mean, it's an ongoing thing.
Yeah. What would you say to people who are still in if they happen to hear this?
You know, life has a lot of hurts and a lot of pain, and it's not your fault. God's not mad at you if things are going wrong. And God's got so much more for you than to put your faith in a person to be able to walk in freedom and to have control of thinking on your own and letting God even just control your steps and guide you instead of walking in fear. There's just so much more for you out there. And there is life after Remnant. Mm-hmm. I think that one of the biggest things that we're taught the most in there is that if someone leaves Remnant, God turns his face from them. It's a big fear tactic. We're going to lose our salvation. Mm-hmm. And I know you all went through so much more. Sarah, you went through so much more than I could ever say I went through. I can't even imagine.
I don't know about that.
Abuse is abuse, right?
Yeah. When you're threatened with your faith and, you know, your hope for eternity by your performance or lack of it, I just think there's just a place for people like that that is scary. I don't want to ever see anyone go there to that dark place. But to mess with someone in their spiritualness, their faith, to make someone lose their faith is very serious.
It is very serious. Even though the content of what went on in Remnant versus the NXIVM was very different, there's so many overlaps. And I think one of the main things I see is that it's a lie. Like they're offering this one thing, this path of joy and health and community and all these things. But ultimately, the underlying message is you're not good enough and you're made to feel terrible about yourself and always on the hamster wheel. You can never achieve it. It's a bait and switch.
Also abusing the world of faith. It's going in there and knowing people, how to leverage people because they have a buy-in to faith and then taking the language over and while pretending to have the faith and promote it. It's the ultimate abuse of power.
I totally agree. And I just have to say, I've seen those effects on my youngest children. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's devastating. And our family unit has more healing to do. And so I'm committed to that. It's a hard walk, but it's worth walking to be free, to be out from under that abuse. It takes so much courage to do it. You have to have the right reason to get out, and it has to trump your reason to stay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You have to reach down inside of you. And for me, it was my kids.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I will not keep my children in this one more day. I will not. Even if I have to lose them eventually through this process, I've got to at least try. You know, that's like the mama bear instinct.
Yes.
You know?
Yeah.
I feel it.
Mm-hmm.
What was it like for you to watch The Way Down when it came out?
It was very hard to watch. You know, I said at the beginning of this that I was the one that was, you know, mad and tired looking. It was hard to do that interview.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Everything came back up. I had spent years trying. I felt like I was in a good place, but it all came back up. I had to push it and deal with it all again. And then watching it again, like, here we go again. I'm glad I did it. I really am. I've gotten a lot of good feedback, a lot of people thanking me for having the courage to speak out. And I just want more people to have their voice and to feel that strength that, wow, if Gina can do it, I can do it.
Good for you.
Thank you.
Do you know what to expect on the next two? Have they showed it to you yet?
No, I haven't seen it. I'm very excited to see it. I have no idea all the details, but I do believe there's going to be more of a focus on the plane crash.
Yes. Mm-hmm. How was that news for you?
It's still very surreal to me. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to imagine that, you know, that she's gone. She's not here with us. I don't think anybody in my circles, you know, as much as we wanted them to be exposed, we never wanted this
right
to happen to them.
No.
We just wanted
them,
you know, to be shut down, you know, just stop it. It's very surreal. But I do think that there is a message in the way it went down.
Yeah, seriously. And metaphorically.
Metaphorically, exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
It strikes me as, I'm just not sure how the people who remain in Remnant would be able to explain that, given her clear message that if something is bad in your life, that's God's will.
Right.
What kind of mental gymnastics would one have to do to explain this?
I have learned as I've dug into my faith, Jesus Christ says to follow him is going to be a path of suffering. That if the world hated him, the world will hate us, and there will be persecution, and things are not going to go right for us always walking this path of following in his footsteps, but the reward is great. But, you know, that's the exact opposite of what she taught in there. That's why, look at the fruit right there. What she taught in there was, if you stay in obedience with God, you're going to have blessings and favor all the time, and nothing's going to ever go wrong. And if it does go wrong, you've done something wrong. That is
right.
Totally opposite
of
the Christian faith and philosophy.
And would be hard to reconcile if you're still in and wondering what happened to the leader. If it, like, what did she do wrong? Maybe she led people. That's how I would interpret it, you know?
Oh, I see where you're going with that. No. So, yeah. Again, I would say, look at the fruit, because for someone in Remnant that has been told to examine the fruit and to stay in the Word of God, I would say, get in the Word of God and read what God says about people that are leading his sheep astray. He's not happy with that. There's definitely a path of suffering that is from trying to do the right thing and being persecuted for it. But there's another path of suffering that's self-induced because you're going the wrong way. So you have to think on your own. You have to really have this relationship with the Lord that I don't know if they're being taught that. You know, that's what's so wrong about all of this and what gives churches in general a bad reputation.
Sure.
So I would just say, you know, I'm praying for all of them. I'm there to help anybody that wants to talk. And just encourage them to just get into the Word, like she has always said, and examine for yourself the fruit, because God does not deal with people that mislead his children. He does not deal well with them.
Mm-hmm. And the fruit meaning, like, look at the evidence? Is that another way of saying it.
Listen to the stories from all the people. I mean, yeah. How can so many people tell the same story be lying?
Right.
It's amazing. It's amazing the gymnastics people have to go through when they hear the same story from like multiple decades.
Oh my God, I just made a correlation. Because when we were in NXIVM, they would always say, get the data, get the information, get the data. And, and then now that we've left and the people who stayed won't get the data, they won't talk to us because they're shunning us, right? Because we're liars and we're, you know. We're just doing it for the attention, right? Blah, blah, blah. Because this is what, that was our goal. Oh, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, so now it's the same directive in both groups that was now, I mean, that's what we did. We got the data and we were like, we don't want to be a part of this anymore. You looked at the fruit. It was rotten. You got out. So
that's exactly what I did. Yeah. I looked at the data. I mean, and it speaks for itself. And if you will think on your own, that's the key. If you will think on your own and not let some other person persuade you, either way, this has got to be you looking at it yourself and making those decisions and then sifting through all that. The fear tactics keep you from doing it, but I just encourage people to just, you know, don't dismiss the data. Like you said, I mean, it's just stacking up.
That's really good advice. Thank you so much, Gina.
Thank you, Gina.
This has been really enlightening, emotional, as per usual. Yeah.
Thanks for sharing.
Oh, you're so welcome. Thank you for letting me share from my heart and share my faith. And I just hope and pray that people will hear this and they will have encouragement and they will have these things in their mind of what to be looking for. I'm going to spend the rest of my life as you are, I'm sure as well, you know, always like being very skeptical from here on out.
Sure. I think that's what is most astounding about your story is that you left and you still have faith. You know, so many of the people we've spoken to left and, you know, became atheist or, you know, very skeptical or very harsh with the world. And I think what the distinction is that I'm hearing is that you have faith, but it's loving and there's no fear.
Yeah.
And you have critical thinking. So you're thinking for yourself, but you're connected to this higher power in a beautiful, loving way and without all the punishment and fear that comes with these high demand groups.
Oh.
And who can say no to that? It sounds great.
Oh. Wow. Thank you for saying that. Yay. Thank you. This has been so wonderful. Thank you all so much.
Imagine yourself walking into a forest. You can see the path and the trees. High above you, the air is crisp. You are walking towards your happy place. Allegedly, say it with me. Anything said here on this podcast about alleged cults, alleged MLM schemes, alleged douchebaggery, mindfuckery, criminality, spiritual fraud, or the like, is offered purely as commentary. Because the views and opinions expressed on A Little Bit Culty do not necessarily reflect on official policy or position of the podcast. And any content provided by our guests, bloggers, sponsors, or authors are their opinion and are not intended to malign any religion, group, club, organization, business individual, anyone, or anything. So just let these words drift into your mind without needing to focus on any of them. You are great. You are capable. You deserve to be happy. Nobody's mad at you, unless you're actually a narcissistic, culty criminal. If that's you, cut that shit out. Don't be a fuckwad. But if that's not you, again, you are great. You are capable. You deserve to be happy. A Little Bit Culty loves you. I loved our conversation with Gina. And I loved the last two episodes, didn't you, Nip?
I did. And I think that last two episodes do a good job of addressing the conundrum of the teachings, and that's being diplomatic, and the karmic aspects and spiritual aspects of it. Definitely give yourself an educational experience and watch that.
I'm curious to know how the church survives in Nashville and if it's able to survive this type of media.
Yeah,
we'll see. Check it out.
We'll see.
Let us know what you think. And one thing I definitely noticed through the whole time watching Gwen Chamberlain is that she had a lot of word salad. Got something to share, babe?
Whether you take a donut hole as blank space or as an entity unto itself is a purely metaphysical question and does not affect the taste of the donut one bit.
What?
Donuts don't change, Sarah.
That reminds me. Do you remember what they said about donuts in NXIVM?
Don't eat them?
No. If you were like, when you were getting an EM or you're doing like the process rational inquiry, if you got confused, they called it being in your donut.
Oh, that's right.
They'd be like, oh, Nippy's in his donut. Like he was, because you'd be like, what is love? I don't know. Love is a feeling, but what is love? What do you mean love? And be like, and your brain would turn to mush and you kind of, you'd be in like I don't know. You'd be like nowhere. It's a limbo purgatory. Mm-hmm. Deep consciousness bullshit. They called that the donut. Why do they call it the donut?
Because you're running around and around in your logic.
Oh, yes. It's around and around in the circle of the logic where it doesn't make sense. And on that note, thanks, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that conversation as much as we did.
Thank you.
See you next week. Bye. Sinking down to the depths of the ocean.
Let's keep the conversation going. We'll be back soon with more episodes of A Little Bit Culty with more experts and survivors. And sometimes experts who are survivors, as well as some familiar faces from The Vow from HBO. If you've got suggestions or questions on upcoming topics, find us on Instagram at A Little Bit Culty.
And for more background on what brought me here, my memoir, Scarred, The True Story of How I Escaped Nexium, the Cult That Bound My Life, is available on Amazon, Audible, and where most books are sold.
If you'd like to help us spread the word about A Little Bit Culty podcast, please give us a 5-star review and tell your friends to subscribe.
Seriously, like take out their phone and tell them to press subscribe. Takes a second. We're also available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and every major listening app. And if you're listening on a smartphone, tap or swipe over the cover art of this podcast to find show notes and helpful resources.
You might also find some offers from our sponsors there. And when you support our sponsors, you help us keep this podcast going. Just don't be a little bit culty about it.
A Little Bit Culty is executive produced by me, your co-host, Sarah Edmondson, and Anthony Nippy Ames.
That's me.
Associate producer is Jess Tardy. Produced, edited, mixed, and mastered by Citizens of Sound. Our amazing theme song, Cultivated, is by John Bryant and co-written by Nigel Asselin. I'm Sarah Edmondson, and thanks for listening to A Little Bit Culty.